Bram Weinstein talks sports later today from 3 to 6. Now back to Tony Kornheiser on ESPN 630, the sports capital.
Tony's back tomorrow. Andy Polin here. Jesse Dougherty covers the Nats for the Washington Post. And I'm not a baseball expert, but it seems to me, Jesse, if your number two starter is on the injured list again, your number three starter has an ERA over 21, your number four starter hasn't pitched all year, and your fifth starter just gave up 10 runs and 4 1/3, you got a real starting pitching problem, don't you?
Wow, when you put it that way, yeah. yeah, they do. And, you know, obviously I think you can kind of tier the concern level, right? I think Strasburg going on the injury list is, you know, at the top of the list. And then Corbin's ineffectiveness is number two. And then you got Joe Ross last night is number three because, you know, in some ways you've got to give him the benefit of the doubt and say, look, he was really sharp in two outings, not so good in the third. He saw the same team twice in 6 days, which could contribute to some of the predictability. But yeah, I mean, overall, you look at, like, you know, the results in the last week, and it's not just, you know, a bloop single in the sixth puts the other team ahead, or a two-run double on the last pitch of the night, you know, spoils an otherwise decent or, you know, average outing. These are blow-up outings.
Yeah.
You know, it's 8 runs, 9 runs, 10 runs. So when you're being that taken out of the game by what's supposed to be your strength, there's obvious structural issues there. So, I mean, I it's never early. I know it's kind of a cliche to say it's too early, but 5-9 is not, you know, a defining record, but it's something that certainly keep track of.
Yeah, no question. And look, we were told after the last start that Strasburg had, oh no, nothing wrong physically. And then you find out hours before he's supposed to pitch, oh yeah, he's back on the injured list. They're saying there's no physical problem with Corbin, but he's been absolutely terrible in his first two starts. I mean, do we believe that there's nothing physically wrong with Corbin?
It's tough to say. I mean, I think my job is to kind of present what the team says in some cases with a, you know, the necessary doses of skepticism. So In the case of Strasburg last start, I think we did that with a heavy dose. And obviously it turns out that he's on the injured list with Corbin. I don't think there's not anything that's so overt to suggest an injury. That doesn't mean he's not injured. It doesn't mean there's a situation in which the Nationals say he is injured to allow him to get, you know, a few starts out of the spotlight and figure this out. You know, that happens a lot as well in baseball. It's not just a Nationals thing. But with Strasburg, you know, you see 89, 90 on the gun. You see such a lack of command of all his pitches where, you know, he's throwing curveballs and changeups about, you know, 60% of the time just to try and get anything over the plate. That's an alarming sign. Corbin, I can look at these starts and say they look pretty similar to a four-start stretch. I think it was four starts in 2019 in May of that year when he eventually figures it out. Now, does that mean he's going to this time? I don't know. You can't see the future, but it doesn't scream injury to me.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what I'm saying is when you see the results for Corbin, it more just screams lack of command, trying to figure something out. Could be a mechanical issue. He could be speeding up his delivery too much, trying to find something. So, I'm interested to see how he pitches tonight. Obviously, it's a huge storyline going into tonight's game. It is the storyline, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah. Now, it's the other starter that I want to ask you about is John Lester. All the others in the Corona protocol have come back. Does this lead us to believe that he's the one that had it? Because, you know, here we are 3 weeks into the season, we haven't seen him yet.
So, I'll just lean on sort of our policy, which is to not name guys unless we sort of have confirmation from them.
Mm-hmm.
But what I will say is, in terms of like reading tea leaves of his recovery, I think that when a pitcher, and this is not sort of saying yes or no to your question, but it is saying like, well, when a pitcher misses a week and, you know, change of spring training for a parathyroid surgery, and then he also misses the first 2 weeks of the season for whatever reason he was on the COVID list, it's a lot different to ramp him back up than Josh Bell or Kyle Schwarber, right? Or a reliever, because starting pitchers, you know, they're such creatures of habit, and they're built up to a certain pitch count. So by the end of spring training, that pitch count for most guys is like 80, 85 pitches. Mm-hmm. And then you see them get to that number in their first start, and then it becomes 100, and then it becomes 105 if they're pitching really well. Lester was up to 70. He was already not the number he wanted to be because of the parathyroid procedure, and now he gets knocked back down. It's almost like dialing back the clock, you know? So I think one of the biggest reason why he is still not back, he is clear to play, he's just not back with the team, is because he's been training at the alternate site, trying to get that pitch count back up to what it was in spring training.
Okay.
I think that's probably the biggest reason, and whether, you know, reading who he was on the COVID list, I think that's something everyone can do on their own.
Okay, but and everything seems to be on track that he'll come back at some point. Do we have any idea when that might be?
Yeah, so he threw 49 pitches last Thursday, and it was like he's on a starter's rotation spot now, so he's going to pitch again today, and you figure if you layer, like, usually it's like 20, 25 pitches an outing in these sort of simulated game type deals. That's how they deal with spring training. So when you hear that the Nationals are sort of treating him like he's in a spring training again, I would say like adding 25 pitches in the ballpark of every start is a fair, you know, mark. So let's say today he gets to, you know, around 70.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's close. I mean, if things go well, if his arm feels good, I mean, that means the next step for you is either one more tune up or you're pitching in the majors. So I think that's definitely a, in the cards soon.
So a week is a possibility on him.
Sure.
Let me throw two names at you. Both are out there, Cole Hamels and Anibal Sanchez. What do you think?
I know there's been interest in Anibal. Obviously, there's history there. And I don't know any connection with Cole Hamels. But I think when you think about, you know, going outside for rotation depth, you have to sort of think it's going to be better than what you have, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Anibal Sanchez, you know, gave up most earned runs in the NL last year. So
yeah.
Is that better than stretching out Austin Voth for the next turn? You know, is that better than bringing up Ben Bramer and seeing what he can give you and not adding the complications of a veteran, the money, the roster spot, whatever it may be? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But I think that is part of the calculation where, you know, everyone wants to look outside. But I think a good thing to remember about the guys who are on the outside is they are there for a reason.
Sure.
It's not always the case. You know, there's like, you know, a reliever like Shane Green is like not picked up maybe because the market's weirder than most years. Not enough teams are being competitive. But when you think of like a 36-year-old starter, 37-year-old starter, there probably is a reason why you're the only, you know, other teams are staying away as well. So doesn't mean they wouldn't be good fixes either short-term or long-term, but I think it's like worth considering sort of how you can patch that internally. Like, for example, like Paolo Spino, while not an inspiring name, was actually fine on
mm-hmm.
Sunday. You know, it's like he keeps Nationals in a game that otherwise, you know, trickles away from them when the bullpen comes in. It's, you know, it happens over the course of a year. So the organizational pitching depth has definitely been thin. There's no question. But I do think it's worth sort of looking in first.
Yeah, and speaking of thin, and we're talking to Jesse Dougherty of the Washington Post, who is thin, but more importantly for the bullpen, it's thin because you got your starters now, second night in a row, guy goes 4 1/3, so you're relying more on a bullpen which has had injuries of its own. I mean, for whatever you want to say about Wander Suero, he goes out there and gives you innings, and and so now they're thin in that department too. Where do they look for in terms of bullpen help?
Yeah, I mean, so for me right now, I wrote this yesterday, that there's a possibility here that with all the updates, the Nationals could go with a four-man rotation and keep everyone on regular rest. Now, I understand you hear that and you say, four-man rotation, these guys need as much rest as possible, right? Like, I get that.
Mm-hmm.
It maybe seems like a weird prospect for a rotation that's struggling so much. But I think one very clear benefit if the Nationals did do that, and actually the schedule makes it possible to use four starters through May 7th, so it actually is a pretty big stretch here where they have so many off days that they could keep guys on at least regular rest, if not extra rest in some cases, with just four guys in the rotation, that being Max Scherzer, Patrick Corbin, Eric Fetty, Joe Ross. So the added benefit of that to me would be a ninth reliever, because right now the bullpen is so taxed, and you mentioned it. I mean, Luis Avalon's going to get Tommy John surgery. Wander Suero's on the injury list with a left oblique strain. This is symptomatic of guys who have had to throw way too much way too early in the season. Davey said last night, if this keeps happening, we're not going to have a bullpen, which, you know, seems sort of like a catatonic quote, but it actually is like kind of, it's really telling, right? Like,
right.
That's sort of the razor's edge they're resting on right now. So for me, in terms of solutions, like I'm not the manager, I'm not the general manager, and I don't like putting on that hat, but I do think that the four-man rotation look would be good, one, because your depth doesn't necessarily scream that you have a fifth person who you want pitching right now, but also because the ninth reliever could be a huge relief to the other guys. No pun intended on relief, but it could really help out to have that extra arm to spread out the innings for pitchers like Kyle MacGowan, Ryan Harper, Austin Voth, who are on the verge of being taxed in the same way that Suero was. Like, this is a really fragile thing right now, and it could help to have some extra help. And the Nationals do have the opportunity to make that happen should they want to buck convention a bit and use that four-man look.
All right, let me move to the field. Josh Bell, who was in COVID protocol, has come back, and he did have a hit last night, but is batting 100. Just an adjustment phase. What's the concern level on him?
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, you know, I understand why people would say, you know, that it sounds like we're making excuses when you say, well, he was out, or, well, the timing stuff. Mm-hmm. And, like, well, Josh Harrison had, you know, was fine, or Kyle Schwarber has dealt with this better. I think every hitter's different. If he's hitting 100 or 200 or whatever it is, or has a low OPS in 2-3 weeks, then, yeah, I mean, we're getting a bigger sample size. But right now, I think, you know, 1 week from him returning, I think it's just like, you know, you take these pockets across the season and they can happen at any time, right? Like, there's going to be a stretch for everyone, maybe Juan Soto excluded, although he was just 0 for his last 11 before doubling last night. There's going to be a stretch for everyone where they hit 100 in a sample of 8 games or 7 games, whatever it is. So if that means right now it's Josh Bell's time and it's because his timing's a little off and he's behind fastballs too often, then that's his, then he'll, you know, for the Nationals' sake, he'll hopefully figure it out. If it's a trend and sometime mid-May, early June, we're saying, well, you know, here he is, you know, with a 700 OPS or whatever, you know, lower, then I think it becomes concerning. But I think right now maybe pause on the panic button with him.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a situation where he's got anybody breathing down his neck. Ryan Zimmerman's been terrific, but you can't play him that often. So, you know, it's his job, right?
For sure. And I think it's actually a really good situation. Like, it's such a manager cliche to say a good problem to have, right, when you have multiple guys hitting well. But I do think, like, you know, in a perfect world for this team, there's a DH. I think it's kind of funny that the GM and the manager are sort of on the record of being very opponents to the DH, and I get it. They like the old way and the National League format, but this team could really use one because Zimmerman's bat's been huge this year, and I think it'd be really, you know, advantageous for them to try and find even more opportunities than they can right now. But to your point, you know, he's not the kind of guy you can play 4 or 5 times a week anymore.
Right.
You want to preserve his bat and make sure he's healthy.
Is the Victor Robles experiment as the leadoff guy over?
I don't think so, nor, frankly, do I think it should be. I you know, he's actually been a lot more patient than he was last year, and I think if you're going to actually give him a chance to hit the top of the order, it can't just be a two-week chance. Like, because there's, again, like, over the course of a season, there's going to be growing pains, there's going to be down stretches within that. And, you know, again, if it gets to a point where it's really untenable and you have to make a change, I understand that. But I think that they actually want to see how this experiment works so that it deserves a little bit more of a shot. So, you know, I kind of like the idea of leading him off against lefties and then figuring out righties to do something else. He's just markedly more productive against left-handed hitters, or pitchers rather. So I don't know what that looks like. I think something the Nationals could try soon, especially if Josh Bell continues to be slow to come around, is hitting Trey Turner behind Juan Soto. In order to do that, you need someone to hit leadoff. So that could be an interesting look. We wrote about that in spring training. Dave Martinez and Kevin Long both floated it as a possibility that they were interested in, but we've yet to see that because, again, that sort of leadoff spot has to be figured out if you're going to flip Trey to third behind Juan Soto as protection. So I'd be interested in that look, you know, but it's also not, you know, I'm not the one experimenting, and it's not really about what I'm interested in. It's more about what they think can win them games.
I like, you know, Turner leading off is good because you get him on base and he can steal bases, plus more potential at-bats and everything else. But, yeah, I mean, you would like to have him in a position where he can drive in more runners and all that. Is what's happening with his contract? What does he have, 1 more year after this before he can hit free agency?
Yeah. And I think, obviously, they've had discussions with him, and it's, if those were, you know, coming to fruition, we would know because he'd have a new contract. So I think as of now, he's, you know, playing it out and going to just, you know, stay on his arbitration deals. And I'm sure that'll be revisited. I don't think it's something that they're going to be actively talking about in season. That doesn't mean that, you know, should the sides somehow sort of come together and find some common ground, that they can't do that at some point. But I think those things sort of are usually more active, at least in the offseason or spring training, than they are sort of mid-year.
Well, I mean, what they've done with their free agents is re-sign pitchers. I mean, it's not a huge sample size, but the position players have gotten away. I would imagine they want to keep Trey Turner, but, you know, I guess it's possible if they got somebody in the farm system and you hit big like you did with Soto and lose Harper, it's not that big a deal.
Yeah, I mean, it's cost calculation, right? I mean, I think, you know, best version of this team going forward is probably with Trey Turner and Juan Soto. I mean, I think it's hard to sort of say that anything but, because those guys are so dynamic. But I don't know, you know, it's like, do you this team has obviously been built around its rotation. It might not be this rotation necessarily going forward, but if it's another one that's sort of around the same price tag, then you have to make some critical decisions about how you pay your lineup and the way you do that. And they've actually done a much better job developing young position player talent than young pitcher talent. That's why we've seen them go outside for pitching, you know, Corbin, Scherzer, bullpen arms, and then stay inside with the position players, which would be, you know, Trey Turner replacing a guy like Ian Desmond, or Juan Soto replacing Bryce Harper, at least in terms of a lineup and stature. So I think we've seen that happen a lot more, but there is a limit to that as well. And eventually I think it's instructive to pay the guy who's here. We've seen it with third base right now, where that's been a question mark.
Well, speaking of third base, that'll be my last question for you here. That Carter Kieboom is down in the minors or wherever he is trying to find his stroke. Do we have any update on how he's doing? I mean, Starling Castro has done fine at third base, but for depth, I think they'd like to have him back. Is that trending in that direction or no?
No, I mean, I think it's right now it's with the look you are seeing is kind of look that's going to be that. Mm-hmm. I think, if an opportunity open for the thing that the Nationals have always said, and they really stick to this. It's not just lip service, is that they like there to be everyday opportunities at the major league level. It's not, you know, bringing up Carter or bringing up Luis Garcia or bringing up Juan Soto, whoever before them to sit or to pinch hit or to play every, you know, 5-6 days. So, once the minor league season starts, I would imagine they're really interested to see how both Garcia and Kieboom react to everyday reps, especially after on the heels of sort of a really wacky 18 months or so since the 2019 season when those guys were last playing regularly in the minors. So I think it's more that. Harrison's hitting really well. Castro's, you know, he's been fine at third. He sort of had a couple of miscues in the last handful of games, but he's been fine. I think that you're going to see this look right now because, frankly, like when you start 5-9, it's only a 14-game sample, and it's really minuscule to some degree. But you don't really have a chance to like experiment on the fly then, right? Like yeah. It's actually become a situation where you're going to lean on your veterans, your more sure things. Mike Rizzo always says the back of the baseball card theory, right? I mean, I think in a season when you're 10 games over and you might want to give the third baseman a shot to even up your chances of being good, maybe that's a better situation than saying, okay, we're down, we need to come back. I don't know if Carter right now is the shot in the arm type player. They tried that in 19 and it didn't work. And I think you'll see them probably ride these veterans for a while longer.
Okay, very good. Always good to talk to you. Thank you, Jesse.
Of course, thank you.